This is Listening Comprehension Paper of the Advanced Level Exam. This paper has three parts. You will hear each one of the passages twice. Now write your name in the corresponding space on the exam paper. Part 1. Listen to the following extracts, 1 to 5, and match them to the corresponding statements, A to H. Then write the letter in the corresponding white box. There are three statements you do not need. You now have 30 seconds to read the statements. Extract 1.
Questions are being raised over the way crime statistics are recorded after it emerged that many police forces across England and Wales have been wrongly classifying serious violent crimes. Because of the error, there's been a sudden rise in the most serious assaults of 22%. The Home Office maintains that overall crime, including violent crime, is still falling.
Extract 2.
The government says compulsory lessons on sex and relationships will be adapted to reflect the values of parents and the ethos of each school. The subject is to become a mandatory part of the curriculum for all pupils aged 5 to 16 in England.
Extract 3.
It's the first British council to cut the cash for speed cameras. We check out whether those yellow boxes really will vanish.
This is Newsbeat's Tamerton Ford in Swindon to find out. And not everyone's happy.
I can't even describe how it feels to lose your child. There will be more deaths and it will be the council that are responsible for these deaths.
Extract 4.
The BBC Trust has said it will review the corporation's taste and decency guidelines in the light of the row over the Russell Brand show on Radio 2. But the Trust chairman, Sir Michael Lyons, has warned that the BBC has to be relevant to the day and age and must not be afraid to take risks.
Extract 5.
The British bank Barclays says it's raising more than $12 billion from international investors, mainly from the royal families of Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Our business reporter Mark Gregory reports.
Barclays was one of four big British banks offered help by the British government to prop up its finances. Unlike its rivals, it turned the money down. Instead, it's turned to investors in the Middle East, notably the royal families of two Gulf states, Abu Dhabi and Qatar.
Now, listen again. Extract 1.
Questions are being raised over the way crime statistics are recorded after it emerged that many police forces across England and Wales have been wrongly classifying serious violent crimes. Because of the error, there's been a sudden rise in the most serious assaults of 22%. The Home Office maintains that overall crime, including violent crime, is still falling.
Extract 2.
The government says compulsory lessons on sex and relationships will be adapted to reflect the values of parents and the ethos of each school. The subject is to become a mandatory part of the curriculum for all pupils aged 5 to 16 in England.
Extract 3.
It's the first British council to cut the cash for speed cameras. We check out whether those yellow boxes really will vanish. This is Newsbeat's Tamerton Ford in Swindon to find out. And not everyone's happy.
I can't even describe how it feels to lose your child. There will be more deaths, and it will be the council that are responsible for these deaths.
Extract 4.
The BBC Trust has said it will review the corporation's taste and decency guidelines in the light of the row over the Russell Brand show on Radio 2. But the Trust chairman, Sir Michael Lyons, has warned that the BBC has to be relevant to the day and age and must not be afraid to take risks.
Extract 5.
The British bank Barclays says it's raising more than $12 billion from international investors, mainly from the royal families of Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Our business reporter Matt Gregory reports.
Barclays was one of four big British banks offered help by the British government to prop up its finances. Unlike its rivals, it turned the money down. Instead, it's turned to investors in the Middle East, notably the royal families of two Gulf states, Abu Dhabi and Qatar.
Part 2. Listen to the following passage and complete the sentences by choosing the best option, A, B, or C. You now have 2 minutes to read the questions.
Emma, earlier this year the BBC conducted a poll which concluded that Britain is the most secular country in the world. Can you give any explanation for that?
First of all, I doubt if it's true. Most polls show that about 74% of British people put themselves down as Christian, and about 2.9% as Muslim, about 1.9% as Jewish, and the remainder are statistically unattainable, and probably about 12.5% humanist. That matches the European Union-wide surveys, which are just about the same. Usually Britain is just a few pegs below in terms of the Christian allocation.
Well, you've had a huge experience of working with people, first as an MP, then now as an MEP, and as a passionate crusader for human rights all over the world. Talking in broad strokes, do you have any insight from all that work into the roots of the religious impulse in humankind?
There's another poll that's interesting, and that's the Poll of Polls, which was conducted for the year 2000, the so-called Millennium Poll, over 60 countries, the largest poll ever conducted. That asked people, among the many questions, what is the most important thing to you? Top of the pops, believe it or not, came health. The reverse question was also asked of the 10 top items, which of course included job, family, religion, friendships and so on. What would you least like to lose, by a clear majority globally, came health. And then batting in second and third place, according to the countries and to the civilizations concerned, came family and religion. Interestingly, and if this poll is accurate, and it's said to be accurate, in the Muslim world, religion came above family, and in the non-Muslim world, family came second. And then third and fourth, as it were, came friends and jobs. It reminds me of a discussion I once heard my mother and one of my aunts have, which my father and my uncle also overheard, and they got a bit annoyed. It was very amusing hearing all four of them arguing afterwards. My mother and my aunt were deciding their priorities. Should they be husband first? Should they be children first? Or should they put God first? And they jointly decided that it was children, God, husband. The husbands were furious. It should, in their eyes, of course, have been husband, God, children.
Yes, the old patriarchy.
Yes.
Well, you raised family, so let's...
Now, listen again.
Emma, earlier this year the BBC conducted a poll which concluded that Britain is the most secular country in the world. Can you give any explanation for that?
First of all, I doubt if it's true. Most polls show that about 74% of British people put themselves down as Christian, and about 2.9% as Muslim, about 1.9% as Jewish, and the remainder are statistically unattainable, and probably about 12.5% humanist. That matches the European Union-wide surveys, which are just about the same. Usually Britain is just a few pegs below in terms of the Christian allocation.
Well, you've had a huge experience of working with people, first as an MP, then now as an MEP, and as a passionate crusader for human rights all over the world. Talking in broad strokes, do you have any insight from all that work into the roots of the religious impulse in humankind?
There's another poll that's interesting, and that's the Poll of Polls, which was conducted for the year 2000, the so-called Millennium Poll, over 60 countries, the largest poll ever conducted. That asked people, among the many questions, what is the most important thing to you? Top of the pops, believe it or not, came health. The reverse question was also asked of the 10 top items, which of course included job, family, religion, friendships and so on. What would you least like to lose by a clear majority globally came health. And then batting in second and third place, according to the countries and to the civilizations concerned, came family and religion. Interestingly, and if this poll is accurate, and it's said to be accurate, in the Muslim world, religion came above family, and in the non-Muslim world, family came second. And then third and fourth, as it were, came friends and jobs. It reminds me of a discussion I once heard. My mother and one of my aunts have, which my father and my uncle also overheard, and they got a bit annoyed. It was very amusing hearing all four of them arguing afterwards. My mother and my aunt were deciding their priorities. Should they be husband first? Should they be children first? Or should they put God first? And they jointly decided that it was children, God, husband. The husbands were furious. It should, in their eyes, of course, have been husband, God, children.
Yes, the old patriarchy.
Yes.
Well, you raised family, so let's...
Part 3. Listen to the following passage and fill in the gaps below with a suitable word or expression. You now have 1 minute to read the task sheet.
This week's excess baggage is Sandy Toksvig. Morning, Sandy.
Good morning. Thank you, Neil. On today's programme, we're travelling in tongues, inspired by everything from Hittite to Henry Higgins. Now, with me, I have a professor of linguistics and a professional voice coach, but we begin with Mark Abley, a journalist and author who has travelled across the globe in search of languages which are disappearing. Now, Mark, how many languages are we talking about?
Of the 6,000 or so languages there are in the world, and no one has a precise figure, but of those 6,000, about 90% are at some risk of really no longer being spoken by the end of this century. And to put it in an even more dramatic way, it means that perhaps one language disappears every 2 weeks.
Now, you took this as a premise for your travels. In fact, you've written a book called Spoken Here, Travels Among Threatened Languages. What was it that started you off? I mean, are you a speaker of an endangered language?
No, I'm not really. I speak Quebec French, which is not endangered at all. It was just the sense that this is an extraordinary story. I think this is an extraordinary moment in human history whereby the perhaps natural evolution of languages, that some are born and others die and languages are constantly arising and falling, that is really no longer the case, that because of globalization and various kinds of economic pressure, that languages are disappearing far faster than ever before, but that there's also great stories to be told of the resistance efforts among people from minority groups who are fighting the trend, who are doing everything they can to keep their languages going.
But was there a personal trigger for you?
Meeting an 85-year-old lady called Cécile Wawanolet in an Abenaki community about an hour's drive east of Montreal, where I live, And Cécile spent most of her life in the United States, but she came back to spend her last years in Odenak, perhaps thinking she would live there comfortably and quietly pass on. And in fact, she found the Abenaki language only being spoken by a dozen or so people, so she began to teach it. She began to do everything in her power to pass it on to her community. And I thought, in a way, that's a very sad story, right? But I also thought, that's a really inspiring story. Her passion, her commitment to keep that language going, I thought that was amazing.
Well, another person with a passion and commitment to language is Cicely Barry. You're the voice director of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Yes.
Now, listen again.
This week's Excess Baggage is Sandy Toksvig. Morning, Sandy.
Good morning. Thank you, Neil. On today's programme, we're travelling in tongues, inspired by everything from Hittite to Henry Higgins. Now, with me, I have a professor of linguistics and a professional voice coach, but we begin with Mark Abley, a journalist and author who has travelled across the globe in search of languages which are disappearing. Now, Mark, how many languages are we talking about?
Of the 6,000 or so languages there are in the world, and no one has a precise figure, but of those 6,000, about 90% are at some risk of really no longer being spoken by the end of this century. And to put it in an even more dramatic way, it means that perhaps one language disappears every 2 weeks.
Now, you took this as a premise for your travels. In fact, you've written a book called Spoken Here, Travels Among Threatened Languages. What was it that started you off? I mean, are you a speaker of an endangered language?
No, I'm not really. I speak Quebec French, which is not endangered at all. It was just the sense that this is an extraordinary story. I think this is an extraordinary moment in human history, whereby the perhaps natural evolution of languages, that some are born and others die and languages are constantly arising and falling, that is really no longer the case, that because of globalization and various kinds of economic pressure, that languages are disappearing far faster than ever before, but that there's also great stories to be told of the resistance efforts among people from minority groups who are fighting the trend, who are doing everything they can to keep their languages going.
But was there a personal trigger for you?
Meeting an 85-year-old lady called Cécile Wawanolet in an Abenaki community about an hour's drive east of Montreal, where I live. And Cécile spent most of her life in the United States, but she came back to spend her last years in Odenak, perhaps thinking she would live there comfortably and quietly pass on. And in fact, she found the Abenaki language only being spoken by a dozen or so people, so she began to teach it. She began to do everything in her power to pass it on to her community. And I thought, in a way, that's a very sad story, right? But I also thought, that's a really inspiring story. Her passion, her commitment to keep that language going, I thought that was amazing.
Well, another person with a passion and commitment to language is Cicely Barry. You're the voice director of the Royal Shakespeare Company.
This is the end of part 3. You now have 2 minutes to check all your answers. This is the end of the listening comprehension paper.